You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Still to come on this First Take, we've got Carmelo Anthony himself joining us live in just a bit, and I promise you'll want to stick around to hear that. And Titans coach Mike Vrabel's comments calling out his star wide receiver Julio Jones. But Stephen A., could you remind the world again what's happening here on First Take?
Well, bottom line is that change has arrived, and you know Max Kellerman is doing his morning show with Keyshawn and Jay William every morning from 6 to 10 a.m. Plus, Max, good luck to him. He's got a new show debuting today.
Yes,
on
I'll be watching, yeah. Max.
He's
crush
definitely
it.
Definitely be watching that as well. So he's continuing to do big things. Obviously, here he's going to be me and you with a round table of folks. Keyshawn's going to be here every week. Marcus Spears going to be here every week. Michael Irvin, Tim Tebow, Dan Orlovsky, along with a whole bunch of contributors like Mina Khan. She's about to come up. Kimberly Martin, Ryan Clark, Damian Woody, Dominique Foxworth, Paul Feinbaum. The list goes on and on. Plus, in the world of sports entertainment. And entertainment, I want people to feel free to come and sit in that chair since they want to talk all the time about how they want to get at me for the things that I say. The chair's open. I'm not hiding. You want some? Come get some. And that's what I'm letting everybody know.
I'm with it. Let's get it. Okay, Stephen A., let's jump right back into it and talk about the epic Monday night football game.
Yes.
It's Monday night football!
Lamar under pressure.
I taught him that at the Manning Passing Academy.
Jackson will throw for the touchdown. Hollywood hits Las Vegas. Hart jumps it in. It's Waller. He spins into the end zone. Four quarters are not enough to decide it. And it is Edward.
Yeah, he knows right there. You can see it.
Jackson trying to get out. Can't do it. He's taken down and it's out. And the Raiders have recovered it. All alone is Zay Jones. And the victory in overtime for the Raiders. Celebration is for real.
After the Raiders' thrilling OT win on Monday Night Football against a tough opponent, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, AFC West teams went a perfect 4-0 in week one. The Chiefs beat the Browns. The Chargers took out Washington in our nation's capital. And Denver defeated the New York Giants. Now, we know the NFC West has the NFC on lock, but what about the AFC West or AFC in general? And for that, we bring in our Mina Kimes. Mina, talk to me. Who has the best division in the AFC?
It's the AFC West, and not just because of last night. I mean, let's look at this logically, guys. First of all, you got the Chiefs, who, despite Stephen A.'s comical list, are one of the best two teams in football by everyone's estimation. Don't need to explain that. The Chargers have a quarterback who's rising, could be a top five passer by the end of the year. A very ascendant defense as well. Derwin James finally healthy. Joey Bosa, who we don't talk about enough, looked like the best pass rusher not named Chandler Jones this week. The Broncos, who have a deep, maybe one of the deepest rosters in football, so complete, getting competent quarterback play. You saw that on display. And finally, the Raiders, who are feisty. Stephen A. is going to argue the AFC North, so I'm going to get out in front of him and say the Browns are very good, the best team in the division, but clearly not up to snuff with the Chiefs. The Ravens are battered. That is why they lost. The Steelers have an elite defense, but no offense. And the Bengals, they're just not there yet.
Well, first of all, I don't appreciate you trying to get ahead of me because you got to lead that argument to me. That's number one. Number two, I mean, I thought Mina Kimes was my girl. I mean, she came in chopping and slicing me up. I mean, damn, she wasn't supposed to be on until this segment came in a segment early just to chew me out.
She had to check you a little bit.
She's probably talking to Molly. That's what that was about.
That's all right.
That's okay. Hey, listen, it's fluid. It's fluid. Every week to week, it's fluid. I'm going to roll with the AFC North, though. First of all, my Steelers, we gonna roll that out there, okay? The defense showed up. They handed it. Bills Mafia. Could you win something first, please? Bills Mafia. Steeler Nation rose up, showed up there by Niagara Falls and handled their business. That's number one. Cleveland Browns.
Keyshawn Johnson just finished talking to me about how Kansas City's supposed to be number one because Cleveland was such a formidable foe, even without Odell Beckham Jr. We understand what they bring to the table, okay, offensively, and the defense will be improved. And we like Kevin Stefanski and what he's been doing as a coach with them, and we definitely appreciate Andrew Berry and the job that he's been doing as his executive. Then, of course, we go into Baltimore. We saw them last night. Shouldn't have lost the game. Ended up losing the game. Obviously, a 55-yard field goal with 2 seconds left in regulation by the Raiders. Pushed it to overtime, and then we saw what happened in overtime. We see how electrifying Lamar Jackson can be. Right, Keyshawn, that's what you've been saying. We also got to pay attention to Hollywood Brown, to Sammy Watkins, to a Mark Andrews as well. And by the way, they had a few, what is it, two or three dudes that caught ACL injuries on the offensive side of the ball, and your boy Marcus Peters is out too. And still look at the way that they play. This was against your elite quarterback that is Derek Carr. So let's not forget all of that. And then, oh, by the way, you still got the Cincinnati Bengals who beat Minnesota.
Stop, man.
Who beat Minnesota.
No.
I'm just saying, I'm just talking about the four teams in the AFC North compared to the four teams in the AFC West. I think it's close, but I'd give the edge to the AFC North.
So if the Cincinnati Bengals was in the AFC West, where would they be?
Where the Denver Broncos are. Where the Denver Broncos would be is what I'm saying.
So you've been sitting here and tell me and Mina right now.
Right.
That the Cincinnati Bengals is right there with the Denver Broncos?
I'm not that high on the Denver Broncos. Not yet. It was nice to see what they did against the Giants, which is almost a damn bye week.
Teddy Bridgewater managed the situation, not going to turn the ball over. Let's not even talk about their defense.
Okay.
Because we know what they come with on the defensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on in the West and go down south a little bit. Well, it wouldn't be south, but L.A. I keep thinking San Diego.
That's right.
But
they need to go back to San Diego. That's why you said that. Because they need to go back to San Diego.
Let's go to L.A. Chargers.
Okay.
Let's just talk about Derwin James and Bosa. Let's talk about Herbert, the young quarterback, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They took care of business against the Washington football defense that was supposed to be lights out. Mm-hmm. They took care of business there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw the Raider game. We saw the Kansas City game. So you sitting here and tell me a banged up, bruised up Baltimore Raven team can squeeze in the number two position in the AFC West?
In the AFC.
And the Pittsburgh Steelers can potentially squeeze in the number two team in the AFC West?
Absolutely.
Because Kansas City's number
one. As much as I like
Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, being Roethlisberger.
That's exactly what I'm telling you.
Excuse me. The offense is not explosive.
But we know what Teddy Bridgewater is. Okay, we know what Teddy Bridgewater is. We hope that the Raiders are going to be consistent because last year they went 1-5 over a 6-week period.
We talked about after 1 week, though.
Okay. Oh, that's what we're doing. My bad.
We're looking ahead, man. Because Stephen A., you're in defending the Ravens.
Look ahead, then, Mina.
You brought up some of their injuries, Marcus Peters. He's not coming back, Stephen A.
He's out.
Like they got major depth issues. And on the other side of the ball, that offensive line last night, Ollie Villanueva is their right tackle for the foreseeable future. I love the Ravens. I think Lamar Jackson is a special player. But this team is so banged up. And while there will be some reinforcements coming back, it's going to be a problem for them going forward. Like, they could not hold their own against Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue last night. How do you think they're going to hold their own against your Steelers? If we're looking at the entire division, the AFC West has the more balanced football teams and the healthier ones at the moment.
And Mina, not only that, the Browns had an opportunity to check that box of that win, that signature win against Kansas City. They didn't check that box. The Raiders had an opportunity to check the box. They checked the box last night. No matter what field goals was 50-plus yards or how many times
55.
They needed to score.
55 yards with 2 seconds left.
It doesn't matter.
I got you.
They checked the box.
I got you. I understand that. But what I'm saying to y'all is this. Listen, just like y'all can look ahead, I'm entitled to look a little backwards. And when I look backwards, I could see an Las Vegas Raiders squad along with a Denver Broncos squad that finds a way to wet the bed when it matters most. The Los Angeles Chargers squad playing without a home crowd. They need to go back to San Diego because ain't nobody coming to watch them at SoFi. That's Ram Nation out there, okay? The bottom line is when you look at the AFC North, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Baltimore Ravens, they find a way to get it done and to squeeze themselves into the postseason. And Cleveland is supposed to be real this year, right? So I look at the AFC West having two legitimate teams and the AFC North having three.
And I didn't even jump on you about Cincinnati.
I'm just saying. They beat Minnesota. Joe Burrow's back, okay? Jamar Chase is there, right?
Minnesota.
Okay, I'm just looking at them. Like, okay, all right, that's fine.
I know.
All right, let me transition here, guys.
Y'all got me with the Minnesota thing.
All right, let's transition here. Speaking of the AFC West, and I want to talk about the Raiders. So John Gruden, in his fourth season with the Raiders, this stint, 20-29, including last night, no playoff appearances. Mina, I'll start with you. Do you think Gruden should be on the hot seat if they don't make the playoffs this year when people like Keyshawn are calling his quarterback elite?
Yes, he should be. I mean, four seasons without making the playoffs, every coach in the NFL should be on the hot seat. People point to this offense and the fact that they've been efficient in the John Gruden era. I think that's totally true. He's actually a really underrated play caller, but he's the head coach of the football team. And at some point, the lack of defensive success, the fact that they've been a bottom three defense every year he's been the Raiders head coach, that falls on him. I think Mike Mayock is probably more likely to get sacrificed first, the GM. John Gruden has like a million years left on his contract, so he probably won't be on the hot seat, but he absolutely should based on his record.
Well, Mina Kimes, I just want to say that I appreciate your brilliance, and that's why I wanted you on this show, my dear. Here's the deal. She's absolutely right in terms of the fact that it should be that way, but that it won't because of his contract.
Yeah.
I will remind the audience that John Gruden signed for about 10 years, $100 million, with incentives, according to my sources, that would jump into about $118, $120 million, okay? This is the bottom line. He ain't going no damn place. But he should. And let me tell you something right now. This is the stuff that never gets said about John Gruden, so I'm going to remind everybody. He won a Super Bowl title with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Over the next 6 years in Tampa, he only went to the playoffs twice and didn't win a single playoff game. He comes to the Las Vegas Raiders, Oakland before that, obviously, misses the playoffs all 3 years. And here's the thing that I'm looking at. Like Keyshawn pointed out, some of their picks, some of the decisions that they made, problematic. Khalil Mack trading him away to Chicago. Problematic, all right? Reason why you've had a suspect defense over the last 3 years. Don't get me started with that. And last but not least, if Derek Carr is a shell of what Keyshawn Johnson says he is, which I believe to be correct, then what the hell is the problem with John Gruden getting this team over the hump, at least to the postseason?
Well, you got to retool the defense, though, Stephen A., to start with, right?
That's his job.
The defensive line played well last night. Yeah. Okay, Rob Marinelli got those dudes playing. They got to shore up the secondary. Offensively, they're going to do exactly what you saw. They're going to methodically move the ball down the field, as you know, Mina. Dink and dunk, run the football, put points on the board. The problem, though, you said about hot seat. Yeah, he's going to be on the hot seat, but he ain't going nowhere.
He ain't going nowhere.
The seat is going to be hot till next year. After that fifth year, then you can start thinking about firing him because it's a new stadium. Them fans and people going to go crazy if they don't start winning soon. And he knows that. He spoke about that last week, about knowing that they got to get into the playoffs. And Mina's right about it, Mike Mayock, which that's why Mayock is there. Because I could take him, push him to the side, kick him, bring in somebody else that really knows how to evaluate talent. That's one thing that I can say about Coach Gruden, having been with him in Tampa Bay. He don't know no talent, man. If Sermon's evaluating.
That's not him?
No.
Hold on.
Hell no.
Okay.
You didn't like it when he said that Darren Waller was the best player he had ever coached last night, Keyshawn?
I mean, Derrick Brooks was pretty damn good. You know, he did coach Derrick Brooks.
That's right.
Right? I mean, Warren Sapp was pretty good.
That's right.
Timmy Rice was pretty good.
Money talks. We all agree. He ain't going anywhere. And he's in a difficult division. I just explained. It's the best division in the AFC. If they were in the AFC South, I think we'd be talking about the Raiders potentially winning the division. But if we're holding him to the same standard that every NFL head coach has been held to before him, he should absolutely be on the hot seat.
Well, yeah, but he's not going to get held to that standard.
Let's also make sure we highlight why he's not going to get held to that same standard. Because you got an owner, Mark Davis, that wants to sell tickets. And even though it's the NFL and people going to come watch it anyway, the fact that John Gruden is who he is, Chucky, per se, that mystique and what gravitates towards him contributes to the Lakers being relevant. So in a smaller way, in a smaller sense, he's like a Jerry Jones wannabe from the standpoint that I want to bring attention to my franchise just as much as I want us to win.
All right, we'll leave it on that note.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
We're having fun on this Tuesday right here on First Take. We got some tweets coming in. This one is from @RockZero who says, First Take, the show today's awesome. Surprise with Mina Kimes, Stephen A. getting jabs at you. First hour off the chain and more love for Mina.
Oh.
Next, we got this one from JFT Wynn who said, Yeah. Gotta love Mina Kimes jumping in there correcting. Correcting with her red pen.
You know, I mean,
hi,
no,
Mina.
I love Mina. I love Mina to death, her and Kimberly. And you know I love you, Molly, but I have to confess, you know, I'm going to have to call my sisters. I mean, the ladies
have
been, just beating me up since last week. I mean, where's the love? Where is the love? Where I thought
it's
I
called
thought
tough
I
love.
Had it.
She's correcting
it's
you.
It's not coming
tough
in
love.
This segment, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
I take my jewelry off.
Let's go there. Oh, boy. Taking the earrings
oh,
off.
Go ahead. Russell Wilson
oh, and Lord. The Seahawks dominated the cold Sunday while the Steelers upset the Bills in a full team effort. Both were impressive wins, and now we have two of the team's biggest fans, respectively. Mina Kimes of the Seahawks, Stephen A. Of the Steelers. Stephen A.
Ladies first.
Oh, you want
first.
Mina to start?
Ladies
okay.
First.
Really?
Ladies first.
Mina, you're going to let me go first again?
Okay. That's right.
I went last time.
Ladies first.
Mina, which team has the higher ceiling, Seahawks or Steelers?
Okay. So before all you Steelers fans getting my mentions, crying about how I'm a big homer and still mad about the Super Bowl, I don't even have Seattle as the best team in the division right now, to be clear. So I'm not going full homer. But when this question is posed to me, higher ceiling, it's clearly Seattle. Let's start with Pittsburgh. I watched this game twice versus the Bills. Steelers, elite defense, one of the two or three best in the NFL, no question. The offense, what makes you think it's going to be better than last year? I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, 56% completion percentage, average depth of target below 6 yards. The run blocking looks as bad as it did last season. Why Najee Harris averaged less than 4 yards per carry? No explosive element at all. Meanwhile, in Seattle, you got an offense that can take the roof off. Literally, Russell Wilson's passes are hitting the roof. That's an explosive aerial attack. And they look more balanced this year. That defense is improved, particularly the defensive line. Sixth in the NFL in pressure percentage, got after it. Stephen A., this one's very clear. It's Seattle.
To me, it's not, Mina. And here's why. Couple of things. Number one, they were going up against the Colts. And let's just understand that with Colts and Carson Wentz, we don't even know if he's a quarterback in this league anymore, as bad as he's been the last couple of years. Okay, so we got to understand, no T.Y. Hilton there at this particular moment in time, obviously. I know they've got Jonathan Taylor there and Pascal and Pittman and those boys. But in the end, their offense right now isn't what we're accustomed to it being. They've got a new quarterback at the helm. I think you got to take that into consideration. Number two, I'm thinking about Bills Mafia. They were supposed to be a Super Bowl contender, Mina. That's what they were supposed to be, all right? And the Steelers didn't just beat them. They beat them in Buffalo, okay? They humbled the $258 million man. How about the receiver that Stephon Diggs that had about 127 receptions, about 1,575 yards last year? He was relatively neutralized as well. We've got to pay attention to that. I understand that the offense didn't look that great, but the defense is clearly top two, as you acknowledge, and the defense is able to carry them. I don't think it's going to last forever. Najee Harris out of Alabama. I think that obviously he's going to show out eventually. They've got some questions at their offensive line. That's what they've got to develop. We understand that that's why Ben Roethlisberger was getting rid of the football relatively easy. But here's the biggest reason that I'm answering this question. I'm not trying to imply that the Steelers overall are better than the Seahawks. I got sense. I see what Seattle's doing with their offense. What I'm saying is when you talk about a higher ceiling, the road to prosperity is what? When I look at the Seattle Seahawks, You got San Francisco, Arizona, and the L.A. Rams in your division. You've got Green Bay. You've got Tampa Bay. You've got New Orleans in your conference. I'm looking at the Steelers. Outside of Kansas City, anybody could be had in the AFC. And that's why I said higher ceiling. More so because of the AFC compared to the NFC.
Sorry to interrupt you. I thought the AFC North was the best division in football. I heard that a few minutes ago.
But I got the Steelers winning that division.
All right. When I think higher ceiling, I think which of these teams can win a Super Bowl. I want to be clear. The Pittsburgh Steelers are going to win a lot of games this year because of their defense. They're going to gut out 20-17. But I simply do not believe this offense is going to get better because of the limitations of Ben Roethlisberger. I love Najee Harris. But that run blocking? That's going to be a problem all season, Stephen A. I love those skill players. But DBs are going to continue to press them like Buffalo did on every down. They won with a special teams play. That's not going to happen every week. Seattle's defense, I actually think, has the upside to get better. And while I agree with you that the Colts' offense is not good, the Colts' offensive line is good. And Seattle's D-line, which doesn't have a lot of household names but has a lot of depth, they were winning up front.
Yeah, but you got a quarterback that's just got there, even though he's accustomed to playing for that coach because that was his offensive coordinator in Philadelphia when he was about to win league MVP, and they won the Super Bowl that year without him because he got hurt and Nick Foles stepped in. In the end, what it comes down to, you're in a new system, new personnel. By the way, you missed some time during preseason because of your foot injury and stuff like that. You got all of that going on, not to even mention COVID and how he ain't vaccinated supposedly. And as a result, what type of time you spent around your teammate. So you take all of those things into consideration. Again, I go to Seattle. Right. Who do you have to go through? You got to go through more roadblocks in the NFC than the Pittsburgh Steelers going to have to in the AFC. That's why the ceiling is appropriate here.
Here's how I'll sum it up. The question that both these teams face in terms of the ceiling is, can the Steelers get average play out of their offense? Can the Seahawks get average play out of their defense? I think the second thing is more likely.
Okay. I have something for both of you, and yes. I think you're both going to like this for different reasons. So I don't know if you've heard of the Met Gala. It's one of the biggest events in fashion. It was over the weekend. Russell Wilson was obviously playing football, and I know you're a Sierra fan, and I know you're a Seahawks fan. Can we please pull up this picture?
Oh,
look
wow.
What Sierra chose to do with the dress to rep her man. Stephen A., your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I was invited. I could not make it.
Okay.
Busy. But that outfit is spectacular, and Sierra is always spectacular, mm-hmm. So there's nothing wrong with that at all. And that just shows the level of love and dedication to her husband. Look at that. Wearing
right?
number three.
With the football. And also, Mina, the theme was actually American independence, so what's more American than football?
Ah.
Mina, your thoughts on that dress?
My thoughts are, if my Seahawks beat your Steelers, Stephen A., I'll wear that on first take.
Yes!
Get at me. Okay. I don't know how to get that.
Okay. I'm with it, and she's stole your line. Get at me.
I can do that.
Okay, perfect.
I can take that.
I love it. Mina, thank you. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
We now welcome in one of the best basketball players in NBA history, a 10-time All-Star, an Olympic gold medalist, 3-time Olympic gold medalist, by the way, a national champion at the University of Syracuse, and now an author, obviously a philanthropist as well, and the newest member of the Los Angeles Lakers, the one and only Carmelo Anthony. What's going on, Big Tom? How are you, man?
I'm just working, baby. That's it. I like the introduction, though. I'll tell you that.
I feel you. I like those glasses, by the way, but we'll talk about that another time. Where Tomorrows Aren't Promised, that is the title of your new memoir. Why this book? Why now?
I honestly think that the timing is right to be able to tell that part of the story. I think the people that kind of grew up with me, my fan base who grew up with me from the day that I got drafted up until now, they knew little bits and pieces of that story, but I think you know, for me to still be tapped into a couple generations, the generation that's in front of me and the generation that's behind me and a younger generation, I just think I need to tell this type of story of just what it took for me to be in this situation, from surviving to lack of hope and then turning that over to hope. I just want to give people that raw authenticity, outlook, perspective on me and what I had to do to get to where I'm at today.
Now, your name is Carmelo Anthony. Everybody knows you as Melo. And if for those who do know you, you truly can be very, very mellow. Nothing's ever too high. Nothing's ever too low. You seem as even keel as most people are not. Is that who you truly are, or is that just a facade that you put forth to get you through some of the tough times that you're going to allude to in this memoir?
Yeah, well, it's not a facade. It is, that's who I am at my core.
Right.
I think my upbringing and what I had to deal with in different experiences that I had to, go through, it made me get to that point where I'm super mellowed out and just, relaxed and just, I would say at peace. It's a peace. That's a great feeling to have. Some people call it, too mellow, but I say stay mellow at the end of the day. So I had to get to this point. It took a lot of work, for me to get to this point where, like you said, I'm just at even keel.
When do you believe you got to that point where you were even keel, where you were mellow, where you just embraced life as what it is, not too high, not too low, and something that you would just pile your way through? When do you believe you got to that point?
I would say over the past couple years. Mm. I had to really, experience being out the league and kind of just hitting, rock bottom, so to say, in personal life, professional life. And I had to experience that. So I had to crawl my way out of that. I had to dig my way out of that darkness. So seeing that and being a part of that and experiencing that, seeing the other side of that where I'm at now, I'm definitely at peace, knowing what I had to go through and what I experienced.
When you went through it, you talk about the 2018-2019 season, 10 games in, the Houston Rockets decide to let you go. You're talking about having questions as to whether or not you were ever going to be in this league again. Did you have questions at any point as to whether or not you belonged in the league? I didn't, but a whole bunch of your contemporaries certainly didn't have those questions about you. But did you have those questions about yourself at that particular moment in time?
Nah, I never doubted that. I never thought about, should I be in this league or do I still belong in this league? I had to really kind of do the knowledge on the business of the league and the business of basketball and sports and, people, and just kind of taking it into another perspective than I had before. Before, it was just playing basketball and, doing what I do and, being the face of, multiple organizations. You didn't really think too much about anything. So, but now I got a newfound perspective on just the way that the game is supposed to be played, the business of the game, and just what I want out of it. I think I took back control of my own self and my own game and my own career to a point where I can have a different perspective now and a new outlook on things.
How helpful were some people along the way? And by that, I mean, I'm thinking about a guy like a Russell Westbrook that you played with in Oklahoma City, and people keep sleeping on the kind of businessman that he is and some of the big things he's doing off the basketball court as well. You've played with guys like him. Obviously, you've been friends with LeBron James, D. Wade, Chris Paul. You've been in Portland with a guy like Damian Lillard, who's been doing big things throughout his career. How helpful were those individuals in helping you reach that point?
Well, it was good, but I respect all of those guys for what they bring, not just on the court, but off the court as well, and what they're into, what they're creating. But for me, I had to carve out my own lane, and I've always felt like that. Even since I was younger, I had to carve my own lane and figure out who I was and what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it, and doing it my way. I think now, kind of just having that experience and, being business-minded now and seeing things from a different perspective, that's where I'm at. So because I had to do it, because I had to put the work in and do the work and talk to people and be comfortable with being uncomfortable and vulnerable, that's when I started to really discover who really and truly I am.
Let me transition to the basketball court because now you are a member of the Los Angeles Lakers. You've been back in the league for a couple of years, clearly reminding everybody of what the hell you can do on the basketball court. So there's no question about that now. Now you've gone from wondering whether you was going to be in the league to being back into the league to getting to the postseason to now being on a championship squad with championship expectations. That's the one thing that's eluded you in your entire illustrious career is a trip to the finals and obviously a championship. How are you feeling about being a member of the Los Angeles Lakers, even with everybody saying that y'all are the oldest team in the league, because y'all are?
Well, I mean, that's a fact. Ain't nobody saying nothing that's not a fact. We old as hell, Steve. You know that in basketball sense. But I just think that what we all bring to the table is a wisdom that a lot of people don't have. Like the way that we're going to be able to come together, hold each other accountable, have each other backs. You know, we have the most knowledge on this one team than the whole NBA have, I think. So if we can't put that together and make something work, then that's on us. That's not on nobody else. And that's something that, you know, that I'm looking forward to. We all talk about it. We all discussed it. We know what's at stake. We're going to have fun with this journey. We're going to enjoy this journey. We're going to embrace it. And I'm excited to do it, man, because before, if I was just to walk away from the game before, then I'd have been at peace with that. I'd have been cool with that, knowing that, you know, I tried to win a championship. It just don't work out for everybody. But now that perspective is totally different. Now I have to win. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. So I know what that does. I know the pressure that put on us as a team, as an organization. But what other pressure did you want? What other pressure we want? We want to go out there. We want to target on our back.
Is that your way of saying this championship a bust for this Lakers team this year?
It gotta be. I mean, it have to be. Like, there's no playing around with that.
Now you do know that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are in the same city, in the same arena for the Clippers, and on this side of town that you're very, very familiar with, Brooklyn, New York. There's KD, Kyrie, and James Harden. Some people will look at them and they say that's what's standing in y'all way for winning the chip. To that, you say what?
Maybe it is. I mean, I can't take nothing away from what Brooklyn has built and what the Clippers has built and what, you know, you can't take away what Milwaukee has done either. You know, so everybody's getting better. Nobody's saying it's going to be easy, but this might be one of the most exciting seasons of the NBA in a long time. Yeah. A lot of the teams have gotten better. They added pieces to their core group of guys. But I'm speaking on us. I only can speak on what we got to do and what we going to do. I can't speak on nobody else.
Carmelo Anthony, where tomorrows aren't promised. Bookstores now, Carmelo Anthony. Author Carmelo Anthony. Proud of you, my man. All the best. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Love, brother. I appreciate you.
All right.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Keyshawn, never one to be speechless. How about this one? Your alma mater, USC, fired football coach Clay Helton 2 days after the Trojans blown out by Stanford. Their athletic director said a national search for Helton's replacement will take place over the next several months. Keyshawn, do you have some key words for your former school?
You know what, Molly, I do. And the one thing that we need to do is get it right. We cannot afford to continue to fall behind the likes of Ohio State's, the Clemson's, the Alabama's, even most recently LSU. We're a much better football program than we've shown recently. Oregon's coming into our own backyard, stealing our recruits. Hell, Ole Miss is stealing our recruits. We've got to put a net around our university, around our region, keep our players at home, but we must, and I'll say it over and over again, hire the right coach. Stop washing, repeating, rinsing, washing, repeating. Let's find the right guy so we can get back to national championships, period.
I love that. Very cool. That was very collegiate and well done by you. I love your theme music.
You know, this is First Take, but like I said, you know, certain things are not debatable. And you just listen to the level of wisdom that somebody else is dropping. And when it comes to USC, I ain't listening to nobody more than I'm listening to this man right here. And Bill Plaschke, who also for the Los Angeles Times wrote an outstanding column about how Helton needed to go. I will ask you this question because I was listening to your show this morning. James Franklin was mentioned by Paul Feinbaum. Of course, Mario Cristobal out of Oregon was mentioned, of course. And, of course, people are throwing out Urban Meyer, waiting a year for him. Where do you fall as it pertains to a specific individual who USC needs to go after, if you have anybody at all?
I really don't, to be honest with you, Stephen A. I think what we have to do, first and foremost, is really get somebody, whether they black, white, purple, or green, understand what USC football is all about. Mm-hmm. I can take you all the way back to 1970. You know what happened in 1970?
What?
USC went down to the SEC country in Alabama, put a smacking on them. So essentially, USC integrated the SEC as a whole.
Wow.
We launched the SEC as it basically what it is today.
Right.
That's what our program is all about.
How the hell did this happen, though? How did it happen to the point where everybody saying this guy got to be a nice guy, but he got to go? How did that happen?
Nice guy, right?
Yeah, that's the first thing they say about it.
Because in the end, we needed to move on from the stain of Sarkisian and Lane Kiffin.
Okay.
Lane was immature, very immature. Steve had some personal issues.
Yes.
So we had to move on from that. This was a safe hire. Started off okay. We beat Penn State in the Rose Bowl, but we haven't been able, won a lot of games, but we haven't been able to beat anybody of significance.
Yeah.
We got run out of the
National
Bowl.
Picture. You're not in the National picture.
No, not at all. Cotton Bowl, run out of that.
Fiesta,
played Alabama, run out of that. Fiesta Bowl, run out of that. It's like we've got to do something totally different by getting somebody that really understands the landscape and what it means.
And to me, because Oregon's in your conference, because Washington's in your conference, because UCLA.
Well, Washington,
I know they got problems. But what I'm saying is, plus you in Southern California,
yes,
you should be able to recruit
a lot
at
of
USC.
Talent, right? In your
you
state.
Should be able to recruit at USC.
Molly, there's five quarterbacks that are at other programs that I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Corral at Ole Miss,
okay.
DJU at Clemson, JT Daniels was with us. He left to go to Georgia for Kadon Slovis, who was a two-star that came from Arizona, Bryce Young at Alabama, and C.J. Stroud at Ohio State.
At Ohio State, yeah.
They all within 30-mile radius.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Of the university. That didn't happen in the past.
Right.
We would stack them up like Alabama.
Yes.
One after another, you got to sit and wait your turn.
That's right.
Think about the days of Matt Leinart, Carson Palmer, Mark Sanchez, Matt Barkley. Hell, Matt Cassel played 12 years in the National Football League.
Mm.
Took a handful of snaps at USC. That's how good he was when Bill Belichick saw him.
So you need someone
He never got a chance to play.
You need someone who can recruit, too.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. All right, let's keep it rolling here, fellas. The Cardinals routed the Titans Sunday. Keyshawn wasn't that impressed. I was. While there are plenty of reasons for the coach, Mike Vrabel, to dislike their week one effort, Vrabel sounded off on a penalty by Julio Jones early in that game. Take a listen to this, y'all.
Critical mistake. You know, I don't think that those are absolutely – that's absolutely nothing that we coach or teach. So that would fall under the category of doing dumb that hurts the team. Right there in bold letters. Goes from 3rd and 1 to 3rd and 16.
Mm. Strong words for the superstar receiver. Let me add new receiver. Do you like, love, or hate Vrabel's comments?
I don't know what exactly led him to those comments.
Right.
Because when I look at why he got the penalty, He was playing football to the end of the whistle. He was being aggressive at the point of attack. Mm-hmm. He was taking a dude down as his running back was running the football.
Right.
You are taught as a receiver to not look behind you when you block it. Stay aggressive. So when I look at stuff like that, being a guy who's been in the locker room, played the position, understand coaches, I think there's something underlying there outside of him getting a 15-yard penalty that made Vrabel go off like that. Something. I don't know if he hadn't been practicing right. I don't know if he was complaining about getting the football, if he was being locked down when he running his route. It's something other than he got a 15-yard penalty. I can promise you that.
That's why I didn't have a problem with Vrabel saying what he said. Because I'm thinking about Julio Jones, and even coming into the season, when he only played 9 games last year, had about 771 receiving yards. The previous 6 years, he had a minimum of 1,394 receiving yards per season and was universally recognized as one of the top 2 receivers in football.
Yes.
The previous 6 years. That's how big-time Julio Jones is. Here's the downside. What you heard coming out of Atlanta, a guy that didn't practice much, a guy that didn't seem to be on the same page with the coaching staff, that frustrated the coaching staff because of his commitment to the work off the field. I'm talking about work.
I can understand that. No, I get it.
I don't know. I don't cover the Atlanta Falcons.
No, I get it.
You heard those things.
Understood.
And so if you're Vrabel, I've seen Vrabel as a football coach. He ain't never done that to no player before.
Yeah.
So why would you do it to a new dude who's Julio Jones, who acquired in the offseason? There's got to be something there that has ticked you off about him on a personal level, because that was a personal shot.
Or a message,
that was a personal
or a message
shot
to the team as well.
A message to him.
He is from the New England Patriots.
Yeah, it's not really a message to the team. It's him personally.
It's him personally.
It's him personally because, again, Stephen A. mentioned injuries, things of that nature. Coaches don't like, I just gave up all this to get you.
That's right.
And I'm depending on you to keep my job.
That's right.
And if you are not available at times that I need you,
yeah,
it's going to frustrate me
right
in certain situations.
And they've been ravaged with COVID, yes, and all of this other stuff. And so you're looking at it from the standpoint of an absence of continuity and cohesiveness that you need in order to be ready for a team when they come in there, like Arizona. And then on top of it all, I'm able to point the finger at you because I think you're doing things that you're not supposed
but
to be
doing. But here's what I would here's what I would say to that, too, though.
Mm-hmm.
I would have preferred him.
Sure.
To talk to him on the side if it was really about the 15-yard penalty.
Right.
Hey, man, you can't do that.
I agree.
You can't. You're hurting us.
But here's my thing.
But he didn't do that.
I'm sitting across from you, and I can't imagine a coach doing that to you. I just can't imagine it. I just can't imagine it. So my whole point is, since they wouldn't do that, why would he do that to that guy? He must have tried to talk to him already.
He could have tried to talk to him already.
Must
have. Could have. Must but have. No, coach ain't going to do me that way, and neither are you.
That's right.
Because if you'd have did that, we'd have been scrapping.
Well, if you did that to me, we'd have been scrapping. So we on the same page.
Bigger than you.
That's why we. It's true. It's true.
You're a little lightweight, man.
is this really happening right now? Let's get back to your Stephen Zay list. How was that experience for you today? I'm just wondering, because you had Jeff and then Keyshawn.
Mina
comes in. She flew in from Bristol.
I will say they tried to be abusive towards me, but, you know, this is first take. That's why I sit in this chair, because I can take it. So ain't no big deal. They can keep coming. And, you know, next week I'm going to come right back at them. You understand what I'm saying? And the week after that, and the week after that. I'm not scared of Jeff Saturday or Keyshawn or Mina, for crying out loud. You, Molly. Let me ask you this, though.
Why are all of us disagree with your list, though? So something must be wrong.
I know, right?
Are you the problem?
Would think that y'all
is it a you? Is it a you problem?
I don't think so.
Is that what he's trying to say?
Never that. Never me.
And you, the prognosticator, you're feeling good about your elite quarterback that you brought that up and look what Derek Carr did.
Oh, we good.
He got all sensitive about Jalen Hurts. He got all sensitive.
We good.
He stuck his chest out when he started the show.
But he's got to do it next against the Steelers, or I'll be back on Tuesday looking like a damn fool.
That's right. I'm glad you know that.
Uh-huh. We all look like fools week to week. That's the
business. Here we go.
Bye.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.